The Center for American Women in Politics at Rutgers University is the premier source of scholarly research on women and politics in the United States. Since 1971, this nonpartisan center has advocated for greater involvement by women, both as voters and as candidates of both major parties. I spoke with the Director of Research at the Center for American Women in Politics, Associate Professor Kelly Dittmar, to gain a better understanding of the role of women in this year's elections. Welcome, Kelly. Let's start by looking together at what the national polls show about the differences between men and women voters in the 2020 presidential election. Taking it from the top, overall, taking the entire electorate into consideration, where do we stand in the latest national polls in terms of percent of all voters who favor Biden versus percent who favor Trump?
So these numbers obviously, you know, fluctuate over the course of the election, but the overall trend has been pretty stable throughout, which is that Joe Biden has been leading in national polls. So these are polls of the entire country, not specific to any state. And his lead has been up and down, but if you look at some of the latest polls, it might be, you know, anywhere between 7, 8, 9 points, some slightly smaller that came right after the RNC, which we would expect. But overall, you've seen Biden pretty consistently leading in national polls.
What did the national polls say about the differences between men and women in terms of who they say they will support?
Yeah, so we calculate this and talk about it as the gender gap, and that's the difference between men and women's support for whoever the leading or winning candidate is. And so if you look at the gender gaps in recent polls, and honestly polls throughout this cycle since we knew the nominee was Joe Biden, they've been pretty large. So you've seen gender gaps in polls anywhere from 10 points up to 25 points, which means, in this case, that women are that much more likely to support Joe Biden than are men. And so the gender gap that he's seeing is consistent with Democratic candidates before him. It may be, and we'll see if this bears truth on Election Day, it may be bigger than we've seen historically, where the height of the gender gap on Election Day for presidential candidates has been about 11 points.
Let's now look at these national polls by race and gender. Tell us about the differences between white and non-white men and between white and non-white women when it comes to people who say they will vote for Biden or who say they will vote for Trump.
So we'd love to have this data broken down more specifically by racial and ethnic group, but a lot of the polls really only break it down between white voters and voters of color. And so what we see there is that Donald Trump has consistently, both in the 2016 election through this election, done much better among white voters than he has among voters of color, specifically black voters, Latino voters, et cetera. And Joe Biden, as the Democratic candidate, is doing better among communities of color in their support. When it comes to looking at both gender and race, there's been a lot of attention on white women voters since 2016. And what we see there is that white women who supported Donald Trump in 2016's race, if you look at white women overall across the country, that number is really close in polls. In other words, it may be that Joe Biden ekes out a win among white women overall based on some recent polls, but time will tell. The last piece of this is that there is a gender gap within these racial groups. And again, that's consistent with what we've seen historically. So among voters of color, among black voters, among Latinos, men are slightly more likely to support Donald Trump, even though the majority support Joe Biden. And among white voters, white men are the strongest supporters of Donald Trump.
So if we turn to the national polls and education, where do college-educated men and women stand on Biden versus Trump?
Yeah, so this is where I think it's really important to look more specifically at white women voters, because what we've seen is that white college-educated women have been the group of voters, particularly women voters, but even among women and men, they've been the group that has shifted the most over the last few election cycles, previous to Donald Trump. So you had Mitt Romney won this group by about 6 points in the 2012 election. Hillary Clinton then won among white college-educated women by 6 points in the 2016 election. And then you get to the 2018 midterms, and that shift towards Democratic support among white college-educated women grows even larger. And so it is a real question, and we're seeing in polls that it's consistent, that that support, the shift to Democratic support among that group, it seems to either be persistent in 2020 or even larger. And that's certainly hurting Donald Trump, right? That's an area where he would need to do better. So we're seeing that in the polls.
White men with a college degree prefer Trump over Biden. Is that correct?
Right. Yeah, there's some different polls on this, but they're certainly closer to some polls where white men with a college degree are supporting Biden and some where they're supporting Trump. So there's some inconsistency in the polling. The point is they're closer to a split than our white college educated women who are much further. Again, you see this gender gap within the group. Among white college-educated people, there is a gender gap in which white college-educated women are more likely to support Biden.
Now, let's look at those voters who are not college-educated, and where do they come out in terms of Biden versus Trump?
Yeah, so non-college-educated white voters, and again, unfortunately, we don't have this breakdown for other racial groups in most polls, are showing that they, again, have been pretty consistently supportive of Donald Trump since 2016, and that is true in polls, both women and men. What, again, there's been some focus on in some polls is his support among white non-college-educated women, is that eroding at all? I don't know that we see that very strongly. I think there are some polls from, you know, over the course of these 4 years showing some erosion in that support, but he does have a stronger hold on those groups, both men and women, white women without college degrees, than he does with those who are more highly educated among white voters.
Now, finally, in terms of crunching the numbers, the Center for American Women in Politics also looked at the gender gap in battleground state polls. Summarize, if you will, what you found, since the presidential election is not determined by the overall popular vote, but rather by the Electoral College. State polls may just matter the most.
Yeah, this is always a tough one. So state polls are more important, in other words, because the state vote is more important in Electoral College. But state polling is notoriously unreliable. So we have to be a little bit careful. And what we do on our gender gap poll tracker is we only include sort of the most reliable polls. And so of those, if you look at the most recent battleground polls, for example, in Wisconsin, Minnesota, Arizona, Pennsylvania, among others, but those are some of the top ones that have had recent polling, we again see Biden leading in those states, and we see the same level or size of a gender gap. So Biden leading among women overall, and those gaps being particularly large in comparison to the gap we saw on Election Day 2016. So actually, within these battleground states, at least in the recent polls and at least in those states, the trend is fairly consistent with what we're seeing nationally. Of course, we'll expect to see some shifting of that over the next month. And I would say that recent news, including the Supreme Court vacancy, is very likely to both change some of the tactics and messaging of campaigns, and then it may come out and show differently in polls.
If you were a political strategist, Kelly, and based on these polls we've just been talking about, what groups should Biden be focusing on as he heads into November, and the same for Donald Trump?
Well, so I think, you know, in any good campaign, you're thinking of two different lines of strategy. And one is, are there still persuadable voters? And especially as we're in a period where folks are already starting to vote, those persuadable voters are smaller and smaller in number, right? Mm-hmm. So you're going to see both campaigns, if they're smart, really shifting to mobilizing voters. And that means relying on those who are your best bets of supporting you. So mobilizing voters who are the most reliable. I would say to you that women overall are the most reliable voters. They vote at higher rates than men. So both campaigns should be trying to mobilize women, but the women who are most likely to support them. So as we've talked about for Donald Trump, non-college educated white women are his particular brand, right? For Joe Biden, if I were him, I would be focusing heavily on black women. So if you look at the Obama coalition, black women led that coalition. In other words, they voted at the highest rate of any race and gender subgroup in both 2008 and 2012. And as my friends, I work with an organization called Higher Heights, and they do great work on black women voters and candidates. And, you know, they always say black women don't just bring themselves to the poll. They also have been organizers bringing other people to the poll. So getting black women to come out and vote, support your candidate, is a really good indication that you'll be able to mobilize broader communities of not only black voters, but communities of color. And so that's really important. Latinas are also really important because this is the part of the electorate that is growing at the highest rate. And so again, particularly, you're going to see that both among that target, among Donald Trump and Joe Biden, because of course there's ideological and partisan diversity in the Latino community. And so there's more specific targeting that they need to do. I think those are some groups that I would target, you know, and then of course your base voters in all racial and ethnic groups, right, who have come out to support you in the past, who are the most reliable. And the one group that I think is a bit of a wild card, but hopefully they do spend time trying to target, are young people. You know, we're seeing heightened mobilization, heightened sense of urgency among young voters. And they're not typically a group that a lot of candidates focus on because they've been unreliable, but I think they will be more reliable this cycle.
You sort of touched on this earlier, but we do know that women are not a monolithic group, and there are plenty of variations among us. So that said, do women care about certain issues above others? And if so, what are they?
Mostly when you look at, you know, you look at polls asking voters, what's going to guide your vote? There's not very large gender gaps at all. Most people say the economy, right? Like, I'm worried about being able to take care of my family, put food on the table, be economically secure. And of course, that is heightened in this moment. You see some sort of gender variation when you start to go further down the list. So for example, and some of those, by the way, are tied to party. So women are more likely to identify with the Democratic Party. They are more likely, therefore, to prioritize the preservation of the ACA, healthcare. They are more likely than men, and even a little bit more than men in their own party, but pretty much it's a party divide, are more likely to prioritize issues like gun reform and gun safety. Women are mobilized on issues of reproductive health and women's health, but it doesn't mean that they prioritize them necessarily in their vote at a very high level. And that really depends on the specific race and the specific dynamics. I think there are some questions this cycle about, because of the Supreme Court nomination, the implications of that, will now there be more attention to the issues that Ruth Bader Ginsburg was sort of a champion for, which were more specific to gender and racial equity issues? And will that now increase or sort of rise up on some of the list of voters?
And what about having Kamala Harris as the first woman VP candidate of color? Would that be a factor, do you think?
Well, I think it's already a factor in terms of voter interest and engagement. What we have to be careful with is not make assumptions that gender and racial affinity change people's votes. We know that that's not the case. So
really?
Women don't vote for a candidate just because they're a woman. There is some evidence of racial affinity where the ideology is the same, right? So if you share the same partisanship, you may be more likely to support a candidate who shares your racial identification. So you're not going to vote for somebody who you disagree with. And we've already seen this, right? Particularly black women who have said, you know, that's great that there's a black woman on the ticket, but, you know, I don't agree with her positions on criminal justice reform, or I didn't agree with this or that, right? And so we have to allow for that too. All of that said, I do think you do see some heightened energy around her selection for the Biden-Harris ticket, because in part you have different communities of Democratic voters, whether they be women or young people or black voters, whoever they may be, who were kind of disheartened that we had another older white man leading the ticket. And so simply by nature of adding some diversity, both in terms of her race, her gender, her age, but as well, even positions, right? Like that she comes from a somewhat different political background than he does, that could just get more people engaged and say, okay, well, I might not love him, but I like her. And I think together they bring some strength.
Now, let's turn from women voters to women candidates, Kelly. Give our listeners a brief overview of what it looks like for women candidates of both parties for races for Congress, state legislatures, and statewide offices come November?
Sure. So there's a lot going on, but just to give you some top lines, in 2020, we're seeing another record year in terms of women's candidacies, their nominations, and we'll see if that translates into record levels of representation. And so at the congressional level, we have a record number, again, of women who filed for office, as well as a record level of nominees for the U.S. House. And so particularly when you look at the party break, it's important to note the difference from 2018. So in 2018, the records were really pushed and the increase in women's candidacies were pushed entirely on the Democratic side or by Democratic women. They made up for all of the increase that we saw, for example, between 2016 and 2018 in House candidacies. This year, it's Republican women who are making the gains in terms of overall candidacies for the U.S. House. We also see that Republican women have seen a larger gain or increase than Democratic women in nominations for the House. And we'll see, again, what that means for representation. A lot of the Republican women are running in really tough races, but so are many of the Democratic women. I suspect that what we'll see is certainly an increase of women in the House. I think we'll see an increase in both Democratic and Republican women, but I think that Democratic increases will still outnumber Republican women's increases. We don't have great numbers yet on the break and comparisons for state legislative offices. As of our most recent count, we're still waiting for some too close to call races across the country in terms of nominations. But we haven't yet broken the record for women nominees at the state legislative level. And then, of course, at the statewide executive level, there's just far fewer races this year.
Okay. Is there anything else you'd like to add, Kelly?
One other thing to note about the racial and ethnic diversity of the women candidates is that we do also see a record level of women of color who both filed for the U.S. House and also who are nominees. And if you break it down more specifically, there's a record number of Black women, Latina, and Native American women who are nominees for U.S. House seats this year. And of course, New Mexico, you know, has the potential to have an all-woman of color delegation to the U.S. House, depending on how this year's elections break out. And so that'll be notable as well. Before now, the largest all-woman of color delegation had been from Hawaii, and that was two women.
Well, thanks very much, Kelly Dittmar, Director of Research for the Nonpartisan Center for American Women and Politics. For KSFR, I'm Mary Lou Cooper.